Blog Talk Radio.
Scandinavian Hour host, along with friends, inviting you to catch the Scandinavian Hour here on KKNW every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 for great Scandinavian music, news, and interviews. And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday and for your St. Patrick's Day. Don't forget to wear some green. Partly sunny skies for most of the day today. High temperatures around 57, 58 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 42. Through the overnight and running up into Thursday, more clouds and rain expected. 50% chance of showers. High temperatures still hovering in the mid-50s. Probably topping out about 56, 57. Thursday night, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 43. For Friday and running up into the weekend, 50 to 60% chance of showers yet again. High temperatures hovering in the low 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to TransformationRadio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Motivation and inspiration are powerful tools that change and influence perspectives, voices, and projects that shape the world. With all the negativity in the world, it can be hard to find those rare and beautiful stories that tell of inspired spiritual activism and individual healing journey. Walk the path with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, on the show Heart, Change, Consciousness, where we inspire listeners to take action towards a more just world. We'll hear from authors, change makers, influencers, activists, poets, filmmakers, and cultural workers who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Heart Change Consciousness allows us to understand the world from different perspectives and highlights what is possible when we are fearless and open ourselves to our soul purpose and engage each other across boundaries. So let's self-heal and open the path to self-sovereignty. Heart Change Consciousness begins now. Hello, we are here at Heart Change Consciousness Inspired Activism as a Spiritual Path. I'm your host, Dr. Trish DeRocher, and with me today is Jess Pino Goodspeed. And the topic for today is Confronting Food Insecurity, Dreaming Wellness Sovereignty, with Jess, who is an anti-hunger advocate. So, Jess, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want to take some time just to let you know about some of Jess's amazing accomplishments and how it is that she comes to this work. So Jess Pino Goodspeed is a licensed master social worker and has been a child nutrition program specialist at Hunger Solutions New York for almost 10 years. Jess holds a master's in social work with a macro level perspective and view track, I think is the language, from SUNY Albany, and a bachelor's in sociology and Spanish from Hartwick College. As part of Jess's role at Hunger Solutions New York, which is a nonprofit that advocates for policy changes and legislation to improve access to and participation in federal nutrition assistance programs at local, state, and federal levels, Jess provides training on child nutrition programs, best practices to create hunger-free schools and communities with limited resources, and research on childhood hunger. As well as being a connection for individuals, organizations, and agencies to increase awareness of, support for, and participation in federal nutrition programs. So Jess, also, in addition to all of this, right, she wears many hats, analyzes policy to advocate for legislative and administrative improvements to increase low-income children's access to nutritional programs, and also performs statewide and local targeted outreach to promote strategies to expand access to healthy food for low-income children in schools. So outside of all of this amazing work, right, Jess is also doing other amazing work. So Jess is a mother of two young vibrant girls, a group trainer and nutritional coach at Underwood Park CrossFit, which is a faith-based CrossFit gym in Fort Edward, New York. She is a former member of the board of directors for Holding Our Own, a multiracial, multicultural foundation led by women of color, which was established to create and advance feminist, social, and economic change in Albany, New York, and is deeply devoted to the nexus of spirituality and systemic social change. Jess was the 2020 recipient of the PostStars 20 Under 40 Award for being a young leader, making significant contributions to her community, and also the recipient of the 2019 Champion of Child Nutrition Award granted by the New York School Nutrition Association. So these are some of Jess's accomplishments, and I've invited her to speak with us on Heart Change Consciousness because in the time that I've known Jess, and I've known her for a very, very long time, she really embodies the approach to social justice work that we're talking about on this show. And so Jess takes an intersectional macro-level view to this work, but she also stays attentive to nuance and complexity and just, like, the messiness of being human. And Jess always inspires me with just the depth of her level of passion and fierceness and how she balances that with joy and compassion. So, Jess, I'm so excited that you're here and that we get to learn from you today.
I'm so glad. Mouthful, but thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jess, these are your accomplishments on paper, but I'd really love it if you can just share with us and our listeners just how confronting food insecurity and nutrition work became your life's work. What led you down this path of becoming an anti-hunger advocate, and what for you is the connection between food, social justice, and spirituality?
That's a lot to unpack, but I am definitely, as you can tell, there's so much, right? So I should back way up. The way that I happily fell into anti-hunger work through my master's program. So just to back up a little from there, I did my bachelor's, and all of that work was very deeply rooted in social justice. And so all of my work really culminated at the end of that about sovereignty in Latin America for indigenous communities, looking critically at volunteer opportunities that particularly college students do in Latin America and how that may conflict with the autonomy of indigenous communities and how some of these like volunteer good deed work can really conflict with how they see their communities develop and grow. And so that was the perspective that I was leaving my bachelor's program in 2008 at the same time of the height of the economic recession. Mm-hmm. So options were obviously limited for me coming out of college, and I really ended up really lost in trying to figure out where can I pay my college loans, make a living, but also like do this really important work that was just a part of who I was. So it's actually funny in this conversation about spirituality and this work is that I connected with a family friend who is the faculty chair at the UAlbany School of Social Work. And we were actually chatting at a Christmas Eve mass. And we were talking about my work in my bachelor's, and he talked about how social work was rooted in social justice, and the core value of social work was rooted in social justice. And I always had this conception that social work was very micro-level focused, looking at dynamics of interpersonal behaviors and therapy and like that classic version of social work. So this was a bright light of like what social work meant and what it was rooted to do and really actually change outcomes for oppressed people in our society. Mm-hmm. And really like dissecting and pushing for change to focus on issues like poverty, like unemployment, all these social injustices that I was looking for to deal with in Latin America right here at my home, right? And especially living in a community that's rural, that is very industry-based, lots of poverty, I would say hidden poverty. And it really shined a light of, wow, I'm in the midst of so much inequity, so much injustice for people living in poverty, people really struggling, that, you know, here was an opportunity right at my door to really, like, work on this. So anyway, that is what brought me into social work. And my second year internship through my graduate program was with Hunger Solutions New York. So it was pretty serendipitous. It was really great to kind of fall into that work in that way. But it quickly, once I started my internship there, became evident that, like, I belonged there. It was a nice, I don't know, the universe works in powerful ways. Mm-hmm. So that definitely is what led me down the path of anti-hunger work. The other piece that you asked me about was, like, what about this connection of food, social justice, and particularly spirituality, right? So with food, right, we talk about in terms of social justice, like what is at the core of social justice is people who are marginalized and without basic needs, right? And food, while it blows my mind that this may be radical to some folks, but food is a basic human right. People cannot exist in this world without having the proper nutrition. They need to grow, to thrive, to be at work, to be a productive member of society. And so food is really, I always see it as like this groundwork, this base of what opportunity can be for people. It needs to be there, right? So obviously that food piece really fit nicely into social justice. Where it comes into my spirituality, I really think about how can you do this work without some sense of spirituality, without some calling that this work needs to be done and it can't be left alone, right? It can't be ignored. And so how can you not? And so I guess I've been asked this so many times of like, how does someone like you come to social justice, come to this? And it was really ingrained in the way I was raised. I was raised in a Catholic church, and I think a lot of folks hear that and think of a traditional Catholic church, but I was fortunate enough to have, my father is from Latin America, he's Peruvian, and my mother was there studying with him under Gustavo Gutierrez. He is a Peruvian philosopher, theologian, and a Dominican priest, and he's considered one of the founders of liberation theology. Mm-hmm. And so I was raised in this church that my family very much was very influenced by Latin American Catholicism, right? That Gutierrez called for an understanding of poverty, not that just that blessed are the poor notion that we get from the Bible, but calling on the church to look at the complexities of poverty, to look at economic resources, look at structures of oppression that are keeping people in poverty, and really challenging the church and challenging people in the Catholic faith that God's real work is rooted in economic, spiritual, and intellectual liberation of oppressed people. And so not only now as an adult looking back, it's kind of one of those, of course, right? Of course, yeah. I work in social justice. So that's, I think definitely what has driven me towards this avenue of work and towards, you know, just always being a helping, I've been in the helping profession and rooted in social justice.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I grew up knowing Jess, and also just part of how I come to this work was very influenced by Jess and Jess's family and having that alternative perspective of Catholicism and religion, where true social justice and liberation of everyone, right, and that being kind of the impetus of doing spiritual work was just really illustrated and modeled it just at every level, right? Questions, thoughts, conversations around the kitchen table, right? So Jess, I want to talk a little bit more about our immediate context. And I imagine that, you know, so you're coming from that particular upbringing, you're coming from your particular track in your bachelor's, you come to do this macro level analysis in your social work program, and then, right, you get into a nonprofit, which is, it's a structure, right? And so whenever we're existing in a structure, it kind of limits or changes how we would do the work if we were coming to it as an autonomous being. And I'm speaking, you know, of from the place of being a professor for 15 years where there's, you know, how I would show up to do the work, and then there was this university structure that I had to kind of operate within. So I know that sometimes working for these structures can be challenging. And I'm curious to know, you know, some of your perspectives on that, and also how your work at Hunger Solutions has been impacted by the immediacy of COVID and the economic impact that it's had on low-income communities and especially BIPOC or Black, Indigenous, People of Color communities. So, I mean, how, if in any way, has COVID changed your work? What, if anything, has it exposed? You know, what are some of the pieces that you kind of struggle with in this work, and what are some of the lessons that you've learned and continue to learn?
That's great questions. So backing up a little to, you know, working in a structure of a nonprofit, right, that definitely comes with sacrifice, right? And Hunger Solutions was established very intentionally. It rooted from New York State legislation that said that all eligible people should be connected to the benefits that they're entitled to. So that is, I think, I don't want to shadow that, right? I think the work that they do and the work that we do in the organization that focuses so much on program and policy is definitely necessary, but focuses solely on that, right? And focuses on alleviating hunger versus getting at the root causes of hunger. Mm-hmm. And so as a person who is driven by social justice, and that is really the compass that I work through, it's definitely hard. It's definitely, it feels almost like this hamster wheel where you're trying to get people the resources they need, but rather never addressing the issues of why they're there, right? So that has always, I think, internally been a struggle for me. But at the same time, of this practical side, mm-hmm. COVID has really highlighted why it's so important that I do this work at the same time, right? I can remember just before COVID, I was starting to feel burned out. I was, you know, coming up on that, I was on 9 years of working, and I was like, what, how are we really moving the dial from the recession of 2008? People really didn't recover from that recession. The people who experienced hunger didn't see that bounce back. We did improve overall in connecting people with resources, but they were so just at the cusp, right, of food insecurity. And so what COVID did was really shine a light that people are barely hanging on, right, to get themselves above this level of poverty that they can have enough food in the fridge for their kids. And so with COVID, I feel like in hindsight, I was in this luxurious place of being able to look at program and policy and saying, oh, I wish we could do more on the systems level to change some work. But at the same time, when COVID happened, it just showed that families rely so heavily on these programs. I particularly work on school meal programs. And so when the shutdown happened in March of last year, it was family after family calling our office, which normally we don't get calls from families. It's mainly we're working with community-based organizations, with schools. We're much more on this macro level. But they saw our programs. They Googled us to see how they can get help with food. And people were calling us and leaving messages on my phone about, you know, where can I pick up food? I have 4 kids at home. And it was women calling me. And that really struck me and brought me back to a lot of my work in Indigenous communities in Latin America, right? The women are at the forefront of the struggle, right? They're the ones facing this pain of not being able to feed your children. So it really brought my work back down to that level. It has also brought back those questions, right, of how fragile is our economic system for working families and how close is looming disaster. It really just highlighted all those complexities. And also at the same time, you know, we're doing our work. We're pushing for policy changes to expedite resources to families. But at the same time, your heart is hurting, like hearing these stories when you're trying to strategize how to get the right vote. And hearing, like, for me, it was just the personal pain of trying to find program and policy solutions and seeing this red tape and bureaucracy literally get in the way of humanity, of feeding people, of making sure that mothers, because mothers are the ones who are skipping their meals so their kids can go to bed without empty bellies, are bearing the weight of this bureaucracy, right? So this past year has been probably one of the most profound years in this work for me. It's where you keep questioning of like, what are we doing here with these programs? But also, what are we doing? But why we can't ever step away, right? I think, and what I mean by that is like, what are we doing? So many times I think like, this is just a Band-Aid to a much broader issue. And we need to be working on this broader issue. But at the same time, right, like people need this basic necessity. It can't wait. There's right. such urgency.
Yeah. And I think that's something that comes up in a lot of social justice dialogue too, right? How do we hold the micro and the macro, right, together? Because yes, we need to be thinking about systemic change. And in the meantime, if we're not focusing on these micro level, immediate, practical, daily issues, right, how do we not pay attention to that? And I think so much about one of my lessons on this path has been there's so many people doing the work, and when we're really honest with ourselves about like, well, you know, what motivates me, what is my gift, what can I do from where I'm at, that's kind of what allows us to dive really into our particular gifts and trust that other people have their particular callings and gifts. And so if we're over here focusing on this, also knowing that there's a network of people doing that other work, right? I'm not sure if that's something you think about at all.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if you're going to look at, like, what's the silver lining here, right? Seeing so many different – we've worked so long in silos that the anti-hunger folks are over here and folks working to – increase the minimum wage over here and folks looking at racial disparities and hunger and poverty and how black and brown babies experience hunger and food insecurity at 10 times higher rates, and that, you know, that impact on their mental health, on their economic and their academic achievement, all these pieces, right? We were all working in these silos. And I feel like COVID really helped break down some silos to get folks talking together and working on policy solutions together to look more broadly at these issues, right? And to look at how they're all interconnected. And I think also by survival, when we were looking at states and localities not getting any aid, we all had to pool our resources. We all many nonprofits across New York State stopped getting paid by the government.
Yeah.
And so it was just this necessity, right, to keep working together and to not look at hunger in just in one silo.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking Vandana Shiva she's a food rights activist, but so many other things. Her political beliefs are earth democracy, and she really sees food as like the social issue and ecological issue that impacts everyone, that impacts the planet. So even thinking about food as like as the nexus, that when we're confronting food sovereignty, we're working across so many social structures and so many social differences. So we are about to take a break, but when we come back, Jess is going to talk with us a little bit more about her other work outside of Hunger Solutions, her work as a nutritional coach, and how motherhood and spirituality really factor into all of this work. So make sure that you come back to Heart Change Consciousness after the break to hear more about Jess's amazing work in this world.
It's your turn to reclaim your life. Experience the unmitigated joy of breathing life into your own passions, into your own purpose, with me, Life Coach Ricky Schwartz, at MyTurnLifeCoaching.com. In the meantime, tune into my show, My Turn Life Coaching, live every second and fourth Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The Finder of Lost Things, exploring your superpowers of trust, healing, and transformation with me, Hannah Belton. When my brother, Christian, went missing, I completely denied my grief. We can either transform and transition, or we can stay stagnant. This podcast will uncover the process that Christian and I went on to find the lost things, him, and to find the parts of me that were missing. And there's things that are missing in you that prevent you from letting go, whether it's a person, a dream, a lifestyle. That process of trusting and finding the lost pieces and integrating them, that's where you get your sustainable transition that will carry on. Tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You can find me at HannahBelton.online.
Get empowered.
Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com.
Can't get enough of I of Soul Radio? Join psychic medium Jamie every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Take a deeper look at the raw side of spirit. Nothing is off limits. Connect with lost loved ones and explore these vulnerable subjects with the compassionate guidance of psychic medium Jamie. You are not alone. I of Soul, Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Thank you.
you for coming back to Heart Change Consciousness, Inspired Activism as a Spiritual Path. And I am here as your host, Dr. Trish DeRocher, and I'm here today with Jess Goodspeed, who is an anti-hunger advocate at Hunger Solutions New York. So before we get back into our conversation, I just want to make sure that you know where to find my services. So my website is transformativeconsciousness.com. That's transformativeconsciousness.com. And I have an upcoming workshop on March 27th from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time through Sangha Studio, which is a nonprofit-based yoga studio in Burlington, Vermont. And it's Whiteness 101, an anti-racism workshop for white-bodied yogis. So this workshop is specifically for white-bodied people who want to be doing anti-racism work and don't know how. Maybe you don't understand the language. Maybe you have a lot of feelings in your body about it. And so this workshop is going to be talking about some basic language principles. What do we mean by white supremacy? What do we mean by white-bodied people? What do we mean by whiteness, right? What is whiteness? What do we mean by institutional racism? So we'll be unpacking some of this language. You don't need to know anything, right? That's what this workshop is for. And we won't just be talking about it. We'll actually be getting into our bodies and talking about triggers and kind of all of those fear responses that can come up when we talk about race, because this is just a fact. We can't just do this work with our minds. It's also in our bodies. And so we'll be talking a little bit more about that. We'll be doing some practices. There will be some time for discussion, Q&A, journaling prompts. And again, this is March 27th from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Through Zoom. And if you go to my website, transformativeconsciousness.com, you can find this under events and programs there. So, Jess, I want to talk more about your other hats and roles in your life. As a nutritional coach at Underwood Park CrossFit, I'm also thinking about one of the things, and we had a conversation prepping for this, you know, like trying to figure out, like, you know, how do we want to frame this? What do we want to talk about? And you said something that was really profound, and I just wanted to kind of reflect that back to you and hear you unpack it a little bit more. So you said one piece of social justice work is the work, and it's also who I am, both personally and professionally. And so, Jess, I'd love to hear more about what this means to you and what this looks like in your life as a nutritional coach, as a partner, as a mom, as a spiritual being. And what are these other pieces in your life work? How do they embody your commitment to social justice? Are they separate? Are they intertwined? Are they just different expressions? And just, you know, how does spirituality guide you in all of your human work?
Awesome. So we'll start with what I talked about with social justice. So we did talk in the first part here about the struggle of just alleviating hunger versus not getting to the root cause. And so to say that I don't do social justice work because I get in this trap of my own brain of like, maybe I'm not working towards social justice if I'm not eradicating systems of oppression. But someone has to do the work, and that is social justice work. And so I often, right, in my brain, in my relationships with my friends like you, Trish, talking through what is my social justice work. And that's where I really, it's in that questioning, right, where I'm like, no, this is who I am. This is what drives my decisions on how to mother, on how to be a partner, on how to coach people with nutrition, how to change programs and policies based on hunger. That's my compass. Social justice is my compass. And if I didn't have that, you know, I think it would be fragmented work, right? I think that's what makes it intertwined. And I heard you say, like, is it intertwined? Of course it's intertwined. Everything is connected. And I have to say, that's my spirituality talking, right? That, you know, it's not, right, it's not, no work is singular, right? And certainly you can help people, but thinking of how you're helping people and the systems that are influencing why they're in the position that they're in and why they're in the space that they're in and why am I working with them? Why am I touching them in their lives? So this is a little, so the other hat that I wear, you're talking about my life as a nutrition coach at Utterwood Park CrossFit. So movement is a big part of my practice for just helping all that's in my body, you know, doing anti-hunger work and feeling, I very much feel the pain of the, like, the people who call me and the work that I do. And also the nutrition work that I do, right? So my movement is a really big part. And so CrossFit is something that I found probably about five years ago now. And it has turned into this adventure of becoming a nutrition coach in this last year. I have to say probably the most exciting part about being a nutrition coach and interestingly, like helping myself find how this is actually connected. It does feel like I'm working at two ends of the spectrum, right? Where people who are lacking basic resources, well, let's, to be frank, are in positions of privilege and can look at and have choices and have autonomy about their food. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do they? Right. And thinking through people who want to improve their life through improving their nutrition. Right. And so weight loss sometimes is often a goal for people. But for me, the most exciting piece of this work is women liberating their bodies from diet culture, from this larger multi-billion dollar corporations that tell women to shrink themselves to be worthy of love, of connection, to not take up space, to be demure and quiet and small, right? Like that is a real thing that women feel starting at like 5 or 6 years old, right? To not be too big. So it's this other piece of like what really fires me up about nutrition coaching is what happens when women liberate themselves from that? What happens when they start to feel empowered to take up space? Your life doesn't have to be this hustle on a diet, and that it's more, and that sovereignty and autonomy from all of that is revolutionary, right? So helping people revolutionize their own lives in that way. It's definitely separate, I think, from my anti-hunger work, but also really gets at living a life around food that involves dignity, right? That involves compassion. I feel to me, spirituality is like just this obvious undertone, right? It's this obvious piece that you know, of course we want to liberate people from all these systems that are not allowing them to live their most full life, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how really that work embodies some social justice work. And I definitely am coming from a much different place than other nutrition coaches. I'm very frank with my clients when they start with me about, you know, my approach and where I'm at. And sometimes it's not the right fit for people, but I'm not for everyone. So it works out. That's a little bit, I think, I'm not sure if I got to all the pieces of your question.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking just about my relationship with food and how that's changed. I just finished a 200 Ayurveda immersion, and after leaving academia, I took a year where I was like, you know what? I need to nourish my body. Like, for years, I was just going and not really thinking about having a body, or food was an afterthought. And to come to a place to think about food as nourishment and also food as sacred, right? Like our bodies are sacred, and what happens when we shift how we are nourishing our bodies, what we're putting in our bodies, how we're eating, how we're sharing meals with people, right? And that level of intentionality. So I think there's so many pieces to it. There's the gender dimension, and I'm thinking about Sonia Renee Taylor's work, The Body is Not an Apology, and she's talking about radical self-love, and yes, like taking up space, right? Like women are so often, literally taught to shrink ourselves. And, you know, what does it mean if we step away and just think about, but I'm allowed to take up space. I'm allowed to nourish myself, right? So also from that perspective, and I know you follow a lot of people. You have lots of thoughts about this. And so I'm wondering if you could actually share with us a little bit more about what your approach is and why you aren't for everyone. I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So I get a lot in this space. I get a lot of inspiration from Chrissy King. She is a writer, very vocal about social justice, and she talks about this as a woman of color, and talks about the fitness industry, talks about the diet industry as a woman of color, and she really is trademarked, really, I want to say, because it is hers, this notion of taking up space and empowering future generations of women to take up space, and especially women of color, to talk about that in that sense. And so how much racism is deeply rooted in diet culture. You talked about nourishing our bodies, right? And when diet culture, specifically diet culture, like tells us certain foods are bad and certain foods are, and adding morality to food, right? Mm. There's that piece, but then it's tied to culture, right? As a woman with family from Latin America, right? Hearing that white rice is not good, and that's erasing a piece of my culture. It's erasing a piece of who I am. And to simplify it to a carbohydrate that increases your blood sugar, that erases my history and my story, right? So looking at it through that lens and challenging and questioning what messages, right, are we being told, and what stories are we teaching our children, right? It's definitely been highlighted for me in terms of parenting and really changing the dialogue, because as progressive as my parents were, right, there was still good food and bad food. There was still this dynamic, right, that just was normal. But instead, I really worked to teach my children to, like, listen to their bodies. When does their body say they're full? What is drawing them on their plate, right? And allowing them trust in themselves at that age, right? Trust that they know what their body needs. Of course, I'm filling their plates with good stuff, but not pushing finish your vegetables, not pushing finish your meat, right? You are an autonomous being. You know, we are born with these powers in ourselves to know how to nourish ourselves. Babies know what to do, right? So that's a lot about intuitive eating. So that's something that's really come up, and it has been whitewashed, I think, in some ways. Intuitive eating, I think if folks are interested in that type of thing, that's really kind of that practice, is getting back in touch with your natural hunger cues and getting back in touch with yourself, and kind of erasing the influence of diet culture, and then looking at it through a racial and equity lens. Chrissy King is definitely the resource to to go to on that. She is amazing and a delight to read anything she writes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, when you're talking about that, I'm thinking about just how, I mean, years ago I taught a feminist food studies course, and we were talking about, you know, just the colonization of food and these food narratives. And, you know, especially if you're thinking about whiteness, if whiteness is a cultural logic, right, in many ways, that is like the erasure of history, right, then as we're thinking about food sovereignty and wellness sovereignty, just the importance of history, of thinking about, you know, what is our ancestry, what is the cultural upbringing and the stories around the food, and how do we kind of heal those, our connections with food, thinking about, you know, both ancestral, but also where we are now, like, where is this food on our plate coming from, right? Like, what are the stories? What are the stories of the workers? Like, how did it end up on our plates, right? Like, I think in some ways, wellness sovereignty and food sovereignty is also connected to that, thinking about, you know, all of the steps. I would always say to my college students in the classroom, like, you know, what is allowing us to be here in the college classroom just talking about food right now? Food workers, right? And you know, who is producing the food? What are the conditions? We would do like a little, it wasn't little. I think that it actually ended up being a pretty profound experience for a lot of students. But one of their assignments was to bring in something that they made, and they had to think about, like, where were the ingredients originating from? How much did it cost to, like, make this? So, you know, like, would it be affordable? Thinking about, like, different dietary restrictions, who could eat the food? And thinking about food and food making as a form of praxis, too, right? And thinking about all of these multiple pieces. And in that, I framed it out as the quinoa debates. And it was about quinoa at the time, but I think that it happens in different forms. And so, you know, quinoa, which is a Peruvian, like, staple food, right, was all of a sudden, like, deemed this superfood in the global north. And, you know, so the prices started going up. And then all of a sudden, as a result of, like, the wellness industry being like, this is, you know, such a high nutritional food, you know, Peruvian people who had grown up as, like, the staple crop couldn't afford to eat quinoa anymore, right? So as you're talking about these pieces, I'm thinking about that. I'm not sure if you have, I don't know, any thoughts that have kind of popped up on that.
It's so funny that you bring that up, because literally the last time I was in Peru was probably, it must have been 7 or 8 years ago now. My aunt and I had this exact conversation, and she's like, I can't buy a quarter kilo of quinoa. It's my monthly salary. Yeah. I'm like, holy smokes. So the fact that you bring up that story is just mind-blowing to me right now. But also, it brings me to my anti-hunger work, right? I live in the area I live is fairly conservative, right? So there's a lot of rhetoric around who's worthy of food stamps, right? We used to call it food stamps, it's called SNAP now. But who's worthy of those benefits? What do they have in their grocery carts? What are people buying? Should they buy soda? Should they buy? And getting at this whole prejudice, right, against people who have limited resources, right? That's what I really drew out of what you were talking about, was how can we criticize and look at some of these pieces without looking at the nuance there, right? How can we not, and even folks who, even I'm talking about like elected officials who support these programs, but really the levels of which they're giving people benefits, don't quote me on how many, it is less than a few dollars a day that you have to feed your kids on with some of these benefit programs, right? So if you're getting benefits to buy groceries, you have to be savvy and figure out what have the cheapest way to make that stretch to the end of the month, and then you're supplementing that with school meals, right? And so really gets back to what I mentioned before with COVID and how families were calling me because schools shut down and they were relying up to almost three meals a day, 5 days a week for their kids in those situations. So then those limited food budgets that they had were stretched even thinner.
Right.
So to think of that and to see that play out has been hard to see and also forces us to keep our eyes on looking at the complexities of this, right? And questioning and, you know, thinking critically about, you know, what's really happening.
Mm-hmm. And I know recently in Vermont, there's been conversations on, you know, what do we do after COVID? What are the lessons that we've learned? And do we make all meals free for children at school indefinitely? Like, I think that's a conversation that Vermont is having right now. So, Jess, we are running out of time. I wish we weren't because I always love our conversations and the twists and turns that they take. So I'm wondering if you can just, you know, share with us some closing thoughts, some things that you've learned that maybe you wish like your younger self had known, some takeaways for listeners, just wisdom and you know, perspectives to kind of contemplate on, and, you know, any dreams that you have about where you want to go with your wellness and food sovereignty work that you haven't done yet.
So I think that my biggest takeaway, and I think what I would want folks to know, especially if you're not in this work already or newly coming to this work, is to not feel discouraged. That I think I had a very simple idea of what social justice work would be. And given the complexity of social justice, I think that seems naive, but this year especially, with COVID, with social unrest, calling out racism and white supremacy and police brutality, it has helped me realize how nuanced this work is and how much just doing the work is so important. It's so easy to get caught up in, and I don't want to belittle it, but to get caught up in the enormity of all that, right? And to really just be overwhelmed by what it takes to eradicate poverty, what it takes to break down systems of oppression, right? But doing the work each day gives us a deeper understanding and helps us to look critically at everything, how I tell my kids to eat their meals, to how I'm working with a woman who calls me who can't feed their kids meals, right? How you can look at where systems of oppression can come everywhere, right? And the best we can do is what's in front of us, right? And just keep moving along. It's so easy to get overwhelmed by that, but to continue to be committed to recognizing oppression, but also being positive that you're not playing the role to perpetuate it, right, and question it, and being intentional about teaching our children and doing our work through that lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paulo Freire talks about how, you know, part of the role of the cultural worker is to just continue to check ourselves constantly, but, you know, also to continue showing up. The point isn't to just think about things without taking action. It's not just doing things without reflecting. It's that constant, you know, that self-reflection. So, Jess, thank you so much for being here with us today. I always learn from you. I am always grateful to share space with you. Again, you can check out my website, learn more about my work at transformativeconsciousness.com. That's transformativeconsciousness.com. And I'll be with you next month again at Heart Change Consciousness. Bye for now. Thank you for tuning in to Heart Change Consciousness on TransformationTalkRadio.com with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher. Make sure to come back next time so we can continue to awaken your soul purpose. Look forward to more conversations with your favorite authors, changemakers, influencers, activists, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. For more information about me and Transformative Consciousness Coaching, visit TransformativeConsciousness.com. That's TransformativeConsciousness.com. This was Heart Change Consciousness on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Well, good thing, folks, so far no major blocking or accidents to report at the moment. We still have a little bit of slowing on I-5 northbound just after the I-90 interchange. That'll be on the west side of things. Heading up into downtown Seattle, but good thing it'll break free after yesterday. Everywhere else, again, traffic's looking pretty good. Hope everyone enjoys and has a safe St. Patrick's Day. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, the Healing Hour with Dr. Sharon Martin, bridging the mystical and scientific. Topic for the day, aware, increasing access to subtle realms. Stay tuned.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Roberts. It could be that a sexual addiction and not hate is behind an Atlanta-area shooting spree that led to 8 deaths, including those of 6 Asian-American women. That's what authorities are speculating after the violence yesterday at several massage parlors. Still, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottom says it's a tragedy.
Whether it's senseless violence that we've seen play out in our streets or more targeted violence like we saw on yesterday, a crime against any community is a crime against us all.
Police say Robert Aaron Long told them spas were a temptation he wanted to eliminate. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell isn't mincing words when it comes to the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border.
This is a crisis. I don't care what the Secretary of Homeland Security wants to call it. It's a crisis that they created, this administration.
This comes after Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said a humanitarian crisis is separating families to deter future migration. More than 13,000 migrant children are reportedly in U.S. custody at the border, and there's a shortage of space to house them. The U.S. government has issued 90 million stimulus checks totaling $242 billion as part of President Biden's massive coronavirus relief bill. Some recipients started receiving their checks this past weekend, most of which were sent by direct deposit. New York State's Assembly now has a top team of lawyers to lead the impeachment investigation into Governor Andrew Cuomo. Scott Pringle reports.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says the team at Davis-Polk and Wardwell will be authorized to vigorously pursue all evidence in regards to the serious allegations against the governor, Hastie calling it a premier law firm with expertise in sensitive investigations.
The happiest place on earth will be back in business April 30th. That today from Disney CEO Bob Chapek, Disneyland and California Adventure will limit capacity to about 15%. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
Better sleep means a better you. That's why Mattress Firm came up with the Rest Assured Promise, featuring the best mattresses from America's best mattress brands. Like the Tempur-Breeze collection, available now, with a $300 instant gift good towards your choice of sleep accessories. Visit with our sleep experts in-store, online, or by phone to find the right bed for you. Only at Mattress Firm, America's number one Tempur-Pedic retailer. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Valid at participating locations only. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/sale.
Allstate now has deeper savings, and deeper savings require deep thoughts and a deep voice, like mine. Save for being a new customer. Save more for adding DriveWise. and save even more for driving safely. Visit Allstate.com or contact your local agent for a quote today. As someone once said, saving today is money tomorrow. That's deep.
Not available in every state. New customer savings based on early signing discount. Drive-bys is an optional feature. Savings vary based on how you buy. Subject to terms and conditions. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Northbrook, Illinois.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to our alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday and for your St. Patrick's Day. Don't forget to wear some green. Partly sunny skies for most of the day today. High temperatures around 57, 58 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 42. Through the overnight and running up into Thursday, more clouds and rain expected. 50% chance of showers. High temperatures still hovering in the mid-50s. Probably topping out about 56, 57. Thursday night, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 43. For Friday and running up into the weekend, 50 to 60% chance of showers yet again. High temperatures hovering in the low 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Maximum Medicine Radio, The Healing Hour, with me, Dr. Sharon Martin, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This is the Hour of Healing Power. In this live call-in show, The Healing Hour, I'm going to take your calls and help you get started on your way to your maximum potential. So come on, settle in, listen up, and I'll take your questions head on. Together, we'll find practical wisdom and understanding about what ails you. In The Healing Hour, we'll start your day off right. Insights and practical health knowledge and concepts for how you really live. I'll take your issue and help guide you with a blend of scientific medicine and the esoteric, including shamanic energy medicine. So let's shake off some of that mystery and get started on how to really live. Together, let's get unstuck. So come on and join in, join up, and let me help and let go of what holds you back from being the maximum you the world needs. Take down this call-in number, 1-800-930-2819, and let's get started on the Healing Hour right now.
Hi, everybody. This is Doc Martin, and we're here with the Healing Hour, and thank you for being with us. I'm a little sad today because my good friend and co-host, Dr. Pat, is not able to be here today, and usually when she's with me, everything is smooth and beautiful. So let's all bring her energy in with us to keep us smooth and beautiful. And she'll be back with us next month. So anyway, thank you for helping me get through it all by myself without her wisdom. And let's see what we can handle today. Today I want to talk about aware. And some of you have seen previous shows where I have a process in my work, in my maximum medicine work, where there is a stepwise process that I feel that people go through when they face any kind of challenge, any progress you want to make on an issue, any health challenge. And I've broken it down into what I call the four A's. At the very beginning, whenever you have a problem, and you probably know this from, perhaps it's from AA or another self-help process, when you have to be aware of the problem before you can start working on it or taking responsibility for it. And this isn't an AA topic. This is the concept that aware is very important for the beginning of tackling any process. And I see this process, and we're going to spend our time today talking about the section of aware. But you have to be aware of the issue. And once you're aware of the issue, in my belief with energy medicine and shamanic medicine, you then have to allow some help. And allowing help is, for me, calling in your allies, calling in beings and energies that are higher than you, higher frequency, higher wisdom, higher knowledge. Because if we can't turn it over to something bigger than our own human mind, we don't get very far. And that's a whole separate segment on that allow. but in the process, aware, moving to allow, and then we take action. And that action in energy medicine or shamanic medicine is generally ritual and practices and processes and energy clearing and take it to the fire and things like that. So once you take action, and remember, you're moving on a spiral, and life to me is best described as being in spirals. Somebody says we help ourselves by the peeling of an onion, you go layer by layer. Well, I see it as spiral by spiral by spiral, and those are the steps to enlightenment, and in this case, I'm not talking about the Buddhist stages of enlightenment, but your own evolution to something better for you, clearer for you, more evolved. So once you take action, then you need to really lock it in to your human world, because face it, we're in density here in the human world. We are struggling through the literal world. We're not always enlightened. We're not always aware. We're not always capable. But in this last segment of tackling any problem, in the segment of taking, after you take action and locking it in, I call that affirm. So that may be you determine that in order to tackle this problem, you have to change one behavior. And you make that change routinely, whether you do it 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months. You've got to affirm that you have listened to spirit in this process that you have taken. You've listened to what's needed for you, and you are going to take the action. So you, this is, in a sense, the commitment phase. This is when you say, okay, we've talked about it. I got the insight. I know what to do now. Here's what I'm going to do. I am doing it. So those are the four stages: aware, allow, act, and affirm. Now, I've made those stages up. Many other people have beautiful processes for development, but those to me are easy to follow. So today on aware, I want to talk about aware because we are capable of so much more. And that's what I think awareness is. Awareness is we are able to get knowledge from the subtle realms. So how do we improve that access? Because when we are aware of a problem, I think it best to really hone in on exactly what that problem is, get really clear what it is you want to change. I'll give you an example. In the aware phase, you might say, oh, I can't stand my job. I need a new job. And you tell the universe, you tell spirit, you tell your guides, I need a new job. Well, all of a sudden you get a new job, but you don't like it. It's not really what you wanted. It happens to be in another city, so you have to commute. It happens to be at times a shift you don't want to take. Maybe it's more money. Maybe it's something you love, but it's less money. Well, the aware phase is about getting really clear on what you mean. What do you mean when you say, give me this new universe, God, spirit, however you call it, give me this new thing, or help me shake off a behavior I don't want to do anymore. So in aware, I want to talk about processes that help us get clarity, help us get insight. I want to talk about processes that hone our intuition, because in those phases of honing our intuition, and that's what we're going to talk about today, we can get really clear. The other thing is, all day long, we have flashes of insight. We'll get a message that says, oh, I should be thinking about this, or I should be thinking about that. But we don't often pay attention. We don't often hold it in our thinking. We don't bring it to the forefront. It's just data coming into our brain receives so much data. But we have to be able to listen more deeply, because just little twitches of knowings may not be in our forefront. Maybe our attention is occupied with the literal world. And believe me, the literal world is jam-packed with data overload. So in the aware, we're going to be getting into phases and practices where we have to be quiet, because it's going to be those little things that we're going to now start to pay attention to. And scientists who know brain physiology know this much better than I do. We're going to have to access different parts of our brain. So if you're like me, where my priority and my predominant approach is the intellectual and academic and linear, that, I guess, left-sided brain, we're going to need to cross over the pieces of tissue that cross over to the right side of the brain to access the intuitive, to access the more subtle, the things that come when we put pieces together laterally and in combinations, the alchemy of ideas that comes together that's not quite A, B, C, one goes to two, goes to three. So in the aware section are different, for me, I like to see it as different processes that can give us better insight to hone our ability to pay attention to our intuitions. Now, I will be the first one to say that I never thought of myself as intuitive, not ever. I might get a flash of a knowing about something, but I was really good at book learning. Teacher says, these are the steps you need to take to get a good grade. No problem, I can do it. But over the years that I've been studying energy medicine and shamanism, I have done practices that open up my intuition. And I didn't know at the time that that's what it was going to be doing. But I have some pretty darn good intuition these days. And I think all of us can access that. I think all of us have that capacity of darn good intuition. We just have to wake up or pay attention or be aware of that part of our brain. So when we do these processes, even if you think you're not very good at it, don't fret. The more you do it, the better you're going to be. And then you're going to start to listen when spirit gives you a whisper, because often spirit doesn't talk to you in a loud voice. You'll get a whisper, and then you'll go, aha, I heard you. And then you take some action. So in a few minutes, we will be back, and we are going to start talking about ways that we can hone and improve our awareness. So we'll be back after a short break.
Kindness been used against you? Are you ready to clear the confusion and reconnect with your power? Then it's time to become toxic person proof. Join toxic relationship specialist Sarah K. Ramsey as she gives you the secrets to rebuilding and rebranding your life after a toxic person encounter. It's time to get past the past, get real about the present, and get serious about your future. For more information, visit sarahkramsey.com.
Transformation Talk Radio.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day.
Everybody, I'm Doc Martin. We're back. This is the Healing Hour. And today we are talking about aware and how we can access those subtle realms, the place where a lot of knowledge resides, But usually we don't grab onto it. Usually we don't pay attention to it. Or if we do, we don't know what to make of it. So we haven't refined it. And we talked in the first segment about when you tackle any challenge, health or otherwise, then you will go through what I see as a spiral process where you're aware of your issue, you ask for help, help from the high beings and energies higher than yourself, your higher self, your spirit guides, angels, you name it. Then you take action, and then you lock it in by affirming that you've heard what you learned, you've paid attention, you're ready to make it work in the world. So we're on aware. And with aware, we're going to really try to access knowledge that is not clearly available in the literal world in our human mind. Things that perhaps our body knows, and truthfully our soul in concert with spirit knows very well. So how do we get to that place? How do we access that? And how do we then start to bring those ideas into bear when we are trying to be aware of an issue? When guides talk to you, and I don't know if you remember my previous show with in Maximum Medicine with Sharon Klingler, who's a renowned medium. So she literally talks to the other side behind the veil all day long. In fact, she's trained herself to only access when she chooses, because I'm sure her brain would be fried otherwise. We have our spirit guides, relatives and past life connections that have passed on, archangels, beings with higher energy. They are all at the ready. They are around us. They are ready to help us. But they don't come in unless invited. So a lot of times they'll be ready to give us some answers, but not without us being quiet enough to say, okay, talk to me. And unless you're in danger and you have some pretty powerful guides, I'll just digress a minute and tell you a story about a friend of mine. When he was young, he went out to the yard into a caged-in area, and there was a dog there that started coming at him to attack him. And, boom, something lifted him up and threw him up over the fence into the other safe part of the yard. And he believes to this day as an adult man that he had some passed on relatives that stepped in to save him. So that's just to tell you that you have help all around, but how are we going to get to that help? How are we going to listen? So we have to be receptive. And we talk about this all the time, and many, many people who want to help you move forward with challenges in your life will tell you, you need to be in a quiet space. The world is swarming with unnecessary chatter. It's swarming with, I don't know if it's unnecessary, I won't say that, but it's swarming with energies of all kinds of frequencies. So if we're going to truly listen to the messages that are coming in, we're going to have to get quiet. So one of my shows recently, we talked about making sacred space. That's a space where you claim out loud to your guides, to the higher beings, here is the place where I sit, where the portal opens for you to join me. I am ready to listen. So we've talked about that before. Listening is a big deal. So you need a quiet place. The other thing is, if you're going to ask for clarity on an issue, you yourself have to get a really clear question that you want answered, a question that you want more information about. You can't just say, when am I getting married? Well, you probably could say that, but it works better to say, show me help about my past in the romantic nature. So the messages might come in about things to steer you as opposed to a definitive answer. So you have to get really clear on the questions you want to ask. Because if you pin it down, as I said, it's about a give me a new job. Well, maybe help me walk towards a job that gives me security, but also stimulates my brain with coworkers that make me happy. That leaves it open for spirit to create something you may not have even ever thought existed. So in this first section, I'm not moving yet to the altar to show you techniques. This is a technique for you to get clarity that works truthfully best with two people. But once you've become good at feeling when something is right or not right in your body, you can do this technique yourself. And many of you have seen some naturopathic healers or chiropractors use this technique called muscle testing. So the concept of muscle testing is if you hold an arm up and you are told, hold it up, don't let me push it down. Now remember, there's another person with you. And that person tries to push it down. If you are holding an energy that is true inside your body, you have strength, no matter how hard they push. If you're holding a conflicted energy, something that's not quite right, something that your field is not coherent, they push and your arm goes down instantly. Naturopathics often use this to... They have bottles of different substances, sugar, coffee, alcohol, sweetener, different food groups, that they'll have you hold a glass vial of that solution or representative of that against your body and try to test you. And again, the concept is if you go weak, then that's not good. Or the answer is no. So strength, your energy field is coherent, it is cohesive, the answer is yes, the answer is true. Now you can test that yourself if you have a good body sense already. So sometimes I'll think, you know, this such and such, this meeting is coming up, do I really want to be speaking out? And I can kind of feel in my body, yeah, no. Or, hell yeah, I need to speak up. This is a critical, critical issue. So you can get to learn that yourself. This is muscle testing by how you feel inside, because you can say, okay, I'm being strong, but it's an icky feeling and you don't like it. Or the question you've asked, the answer is no way should you do that. For example, I'm going to be offered a job in California. Is this job a good one for me? And if it's, you know, really not going to be good, it's not where you should put your attention, your arm will go weak. Why does that happen? I can't tell you the science behind it. But what I think is happening is you are taking in information to your field. And if your field becomes distorted or blocked in some way in the flow of your energy, then you can't hold this, because holding this takes a cohesive thought and intention to hold your arm up. Now, truthfully, when you're speaking true and the feeling and the question is true and right, your arm is really strong and somebody can push on it with both hands, try to get your arm down, and it won't go down. But otherwise, yeah, the whole thing collapses. So you can test that for yourself by saying, try it for yourself. My name is Sharon. Well, this arm ain't moving. My name is Bonnie. Nah. So I can feel inside myself most of the time when something, I don't have a good feeling, I've started to pick up clues in my body besides in my mind holding my arm up by now recognizing if I'm starting to get a stomach ache about something, something's not right, and I need to explore that further. So muscle testing, usually done with two people. But once you start to really feel your field and feel your cohesiveness, you can visualize this yourself, and you can do this yourself. So how do I use that, or how would I use that? Or both in the section of being aware and to apply it to a health challenge. So the purpose of the aware phase is to get really clear on what the issue is. So one of the ways you get really clear is this particular health challenge, I need to take myself to a specialist and make sure that I get X, Y, and Z treatment. Let's make it just X. And then you can test it yourself. How does that really feel? No. Now, if you're the kind of person that the last thing you want to do is get a lot of pharmaceutical treatments, this answer is probably no for you, and you should be able to feel that. So you can take and do kind of 20 questions. You remember that game, 20 questions? Is it bigger than a bread box? Yes. Is it so? Is this thing I'm deciding going to further my career financially? Yes. Is it going to give me daily satisfaction? No. Is it going to give me academic satisfaction? Yes. Is it going to bring hardship? Yes. So should, you know, it's not, maybe not as simple, should I do it or should I not? Maybe we're again talking about moving ahead with a job. Maybe you need to know a little more. But so muscle testing can help you do the 20 questions on a topic, on a health topic. You know, I've really been thinking I need to change my diet. Should I change to more vegetables? Yes. Should I do the avocado toast every day for each meal? Nah. So those kind of things, you can pick it apart with muscle testing. Again, better done with two people, but you can learn to feel that, am I cohesive and strong, or yeah, you know, this is deflated, my energy field's not so great. So anyway, that's the one process that takes another person. So I couldn't really demo it to you in this socially isolated Zoom world, but I think you can figure it out and do it even within yourself. So we're going to talk a few more processes when we come back. Let's take a short break.
Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it. Welcome back, everybody. This is Doc Martin, and you're on the Healing Hour, and we're talking about aware. And we're remembering that we usually love to have Dr. Pat with us, and she's not here, but we're getting through okay, I think.
So the whole point of aware is, as I've told you, this is the beginning of the spiral process. I see it as a spiral, where you start to tackle any issue about something you want to shift in your life. And aware is a very important step because you have to get really clear on what it is you want to work on. And so aware for me is the place where we have to build our intuition and we have to own our knowledge about something. So for me, aware is when you have to be in quiet space enough to hear the voices of spirit talking to you. I believe that we have help all around, and I believe we have data that comes into our brain that we don't use, that we can easily, well, maybe that's too strong a word, that we can access. And we do this by practices that improve our intuition. So what I told you before is a technique of muscle testing. Usually takes two people. And the next techniques I want to talk to you about are using tarot cards to help you own your issues and using the pendulum. And then I want to show you about how I would approach using a stone for a stone reading. Tarot cards, I have two decks that I love. Now, there are many beautiful, beautiful decks. And the original, of course, is the Rider-Waite deck, which was a mastery in the occult back, I want to say 1880s, but I don't remember totally. The two that I like, and I'll show you pictures of them when we move over to my altar, the two that I absolutely love are the Akashic Tarot by twins Sharon Klingler and Sandra Taylor. You remember... probably remember Sharon Klingler, who is a world-renowned medium and psychic, who was on my show months ago, and her sister, her twin, who is a psychologist and family and personal therapist. And they made this deck of cards. It is glorious. The illustrations are beautiful. You can feel the energy. You can feel the soft energy around us. They are, in my opinion, very, very masterful cards and encoded with Sharon and Sandra's energies. And these are women who touch the angel realms all the time. So they really can bring in the higher frequencies. Now, there are other cards of other beautiful healers that can do the same. So please don't think that I'm saying there aren't anything else. These are just the ones that I love. The other I love because it is rich in its color and its detail is a deck called the Golden Tarot by Kat Black, K-A-T, Kat. And she has taken masterpiece artwork, tapestries, paintings from the Middle Ages and Renaissance times and digitally manipulated them in collage. And they are rich and lush. And for those of you who've never used tarot before, and I may not get the details right because I'm not an expert on the total details, but they're usually cards of four suits of some sort. Cups, coins, swords, wands, something to that effect. And it goes from 1 to 10 and then jack, queen, king, and ace. So four of those suits of 13. Then there are 22, I believe, 22 what are called major arcana. And from terms of energy, the major arcana cards are big cheeses. So in any deck, you've got the serious speakers in the major arcana. So for me, we're not totally going to do tarots today for the detail that each card gives you because you can shuffle and draw a card and spirit can bring to you the card with the strongest message for you for the day. I truly believe spirit is working behind the scenes in concert to assist in any way. So I believe when you fan out the cards and you shuffle and cut and draw one, you are getting the information you need to have right now. I believe that. You don't have to believe it, but I think when you work with a card, you will come to believe it. So I'm going to show you how to use tarot cards to improve your knowledge of a situation, to hone your question, to get more clarity. Remember, we're trying to access the subtle realms. And remember, we're doing this in quiet space because we don't want all that chatter cluttering up our ability to hear the whispers. We want to hear those whispers. Then I'm going to show you about a pendulum. And a pendulum is a tried and true technique used by many mystical people. And I find that if you can, again, get your head out of it and just let your body quiet in order to hold the pendulum, you can get beautiful information. Now, this is kind of like playing 20 questions because you'll say, is this right? And you'll ask a very specific question, not, can I have a new job? Well, of course you can have a new job, but it might not be a job you like or a job that pays you what you want or that's in the city that you live in so you don't have to drive 2 hours to get there. So a pendulum can help you answer that, and I'll talk about that in a bit. And then I want to sit, if we have enough time, I want to show you how to sit with a stone. I love stones. You probably know that by now. I absolutely love stones. And for me, they are my vortex, my portal into the space where I can hear messages. So I'm going to move over now to my altar, and I want to show you first tarot cards. So the Golden Tarot that I've talked about by Cat Black is a gorgeous, gorgeous, lush deck. And I'll show you a couple of the pictures of these cards. Now remember, these are, oh, now look at this. Isn't this, look at the one I picked. Talk about hitting our highest potential. This is a major arcana card, the Star. But you can see how lush these pictures are. And how much detail taken from other paintings that she made, a digital collage. I love the detail. And when I'm doing readings for my friends or for myself or for clients, and I'm looking for a detailed descriptor message, I might use this and really focus on the card. But today, when we're just getting clarity about a topic, we're not going to specifically focus on a card. We're going to use the cards as a tool to answer bigger questions. So the next deck is the Akashic Tarot. These women are mystical powerhouses. These twins, Sharon Klingler, who is a medium out of Ohio, who goes to Lilydale, the spiritualist community in New York every summer, and her sister, Sandra Taylor, both published authors in Hay House. These cards are glorious. I want to show them to you. These cards have rich, rich colors, rich energies. They're just beautifully done. And they're encoded with these women's beautiful energy. These are women who access the subtle realms all the time. And these women are assisted by higher beings all the time. So when you decide to use tarot cards, you're going to make the rules. So you're going to say what it means. For example, I have a question. Let's stick with the job idea because that we've used that all through the show. Will this job give me financial security? Well, I've decided that for me, if I lay out 7 cards, if an upright card is a yes and a down card is a no, I make the rules. So you make your rules, but you stick to it because you're telling spirit, this is how I want you to show me what I'm looking for. I want you to place the cards in upright for yes and down for no. So I'll shuffle the cards, before I shuffle, I'll hold them. Again, we're in quiet space. And I'll turn up seven cards. And you decide whether you're going to turn them this way or this way. But don't mix up your process. Keep the same process. So turning over seven different cards, they're a little sticky. And I have six, and I have seven. So I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking about that question. You know, will this job give me financial security? Now, I have to confess, sometimes I hate the details and the logistics of my job in traditional medicine because, face it, the system of medicine has so many things that aren't very fun. But I get a lot of financial security from that. So I look at this, and I've got two, three, four cards upright, five that are upright, and two that are down. So the answer is yes. Now, supposing I had three down and four up, this I might interpret as, you know, that's not really a strong yes. That's not totally strong. So maybe I need to ask a better question. Maybe I need to shuffle up and say, maybe it'll give me financial security, but maybe, you know, financial security, well, what does that mean? Does that mean just enough to pay all my bills, or am I able to start saving? So will this job pay me enough that I can get out of debt? Up, 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 down. So six ups and one down. So this is not just enough to pay all the bills. This job is enough that I can actually get out of debt. So that's a stronger hint or description of what's coming with this job. So it's financially secure, but more than that, I'm actually going to make more money about it, with it. So you can do many things with tarot cards. You can decide up or down. You can decide seven cards or five. You can decide, well, I'm going to pull one. This guy I met, he seems good, but is he a good fit for me? You can do a yes or no, but maybe you just want to say, I want some information about this potential relationship. So I pull a card, and this is a card that, and add some is a word that truthfully, I don't remember what it means, but when I look at this card, this person is surrounded. Let me see if I can get it closer for you. Surrounded by things of spirit beings in the background. So when I listen, if I ask this question, you know, do I want the right path with this relationship? Well, it didn't tell me, yes, this relationship is great, but it's telling me, you know, we've all got your back. So go ahead. Go ahead. We've got your back. Even if it turns out not to be great, we're here giving you guidance. That's how I would interpret that card. So I think you get the idea about tarot cards. You can follow whatever deck you love. And again, I love those too, so I follow them. Because if you are pulled into the place of feeling good, that's what you want to do. If those cards make you feel good, then you're in the right zone. All right, let's shift gears for a minute. We're just going to keep rolling, and I'm just going to ask Olivia when she gets a chance to put up a on the chat how many minutes I have left, because I'm not overlooking at the timer. So I want to talk about pendulums. So, Olivia, when you get a chance, give me a chat. Tells me how much time I have left. Okay, perfect. Thank you. This pendulum I love because a former classmate of mine in the Four Winds training, who was a jeweler, made these beautiful pewter. Now, I'll see if I can get closer for you to really see it. He made an eagle, a hummingbird, a jaguar, and a serpent, which are our four major archetypes in our work. So that pendulum is beautiful. I love that because of that. And this one is a crystal. So whatever you pick as a pendulum, for me, the key is when you hold it, first of all, you hold it gently between your fingers, because you don't want to be moving your arm and manipulating it and going all haywire. So you want to just, you're going to hold it and you're going to turn the question over to spirit, and you're going to let spirit move the pendulum. So you're not in there stirring the pot. Again, that's the old get your human mind out of the way. You are going to decide and make the rules. Again, you're giving spirit the guideposts. Here are the lines, spirit. Stay within these lines, please, for me to understand you. If the pendulum swings clockwise, and for me, this is a clockwise circle. I'm making it happen, by the way. For me, that's a yes. Clockwise to me, in my rules, are yes. A little clockwise, not so strong yes. Oh, man, this is a real yes. This is a definite yes. Counterclockwise for me is no. Again, strong no, weaker no. Back and forth for me, I have made the rule. And maybe, could be either. Holding, just shimmering, not moving, not doing anything. The question isn't so hot, or I don't see any forward action in this topic. Change it up, do something different. So when you hold the pendulum, and you're going to hold it gently, for me, I pose the question, and then I exhale because I don't want to hold any tension in my body. And as I'm holding the pendulum, I really want to close my eyes because I do not want to have any of my human mind influencing the outcome. So I just exhale and I just ask the question. And right now I have my eyes closed and I'm thinking of the question, is my name Sharon? Now you notice it's going count, sorry, it's going clockwise. And as I'm holding it, I open my eyes briefly to see it spinning. Circle is getting bigger, so that's a yes. Well, my name is Cher. You may write down a series of questions. This might be a good way to go for you to get clarity. Again, bigger than a red box, no. Smaller than a deck of cards, no. So you write down the questions. Is this a good job for me? Maybe. Is this an intellectually stimulating job? Yes. Is this job going to help me financially? No. So you're going to ask questions, is this relationship helping me evolve? No. Is this relationship interesting? Yes. Excuse me. So pendulum. Different pendulums, you decide. Different tarot cards, you decide. Ask your questions, be quiet, hold it, let your arm just rest, exhale, and don't open your eyes until a few seconds when you feel the pendulum move because I don't want you to think it and force your arms loose. And Olivia, do you mind giving me another, how many minutes left, please? All right, we're right on track. We're doing great. We're going to switch to stones. Here are some of my favorite things. And I've just brought three stones here today. I believe this bear is carved by a Zuni Native American. And I believe this stone is Gaspeite. I just love this bear. And bear is one of my totem animals that I lean on a lot. I find his strength and love of the forest. There are many things about bear. I can lean into him. But anyway, that's a separate subject. Maybe we'll do a whole thing on totem animals. That would be cool. But I like to rub him. And when I'm deepening, holding a stone and rubbing it, to me, like a rabbit's foot, if you have that, like a piece of crystal. Here's a piece of crystal if you'd like to have that. You decide what you want. I like to use stones. This final process is to use this stone as a vehicle for you to get into, it's sort of a semi-trance. And it's in that really dropped-down, quiet, meditative place where you can ask the questions in your head or you can hear the whispers or see a flash. Sometimes I get a flash of a word across the back of my eyes that then I go, oh, I never thought of that. This is a piece of amber. This is a piece of amber from Chiapas, Mexico. I love amber. It's got a divot right here that fits my thumb, so that makes me very happy. This is my dragon stone. This is what I call on for clearing the path ahead. I got this in Sedona. I love this stone. And this is an opal from, I believe, Madagascar. And it's probably not the opal like jewelry opal that we know of. But get yourself something that you're going to be able to deepen with and just quiet your mind. Now remember, if I say it already, in your quiet space, you're in sacred space. And if you need to do what we talked about before in sacred space, declare it to be sacred, declare it to be a place where you're going to connect to spirit. So when you that, and I just sit and I exhale, and I deepen, and I ask if I write the questions down, but usually they're bugging me so much, they're right there in my brain. And just rhythmically get yourself into the zone. Rhythmically get yourself into a trance phase, and then get your information. And of course, as always, as we've talked about many, many times, you just say thank you afterwards. Thank you to all of these beautiful resources that connect us to spirit. So I'm just going to come back so I can see your face. Well, you can see my face. And Olivia, we'll come back to this computer, this version. Oh, you know, I just sat with these beautiful things and I'm already dropped into the zone. So I know that you can find your method of intuition, your method that's going to allow you to be more aware of what it is you really want to tackle. Ask the questions with all of these different resources I've taught you. Choose the one you like. Feel the one you love. And use it. And use it in your sacred space. And eventually that portal, that vortex that you're going to create that connects you to spirit and your guides and the higher beings, that vortex will get stronger, it'll open more quickly, it'll expand, and you will be there in the zone, the sweet spot in the zone of power. and then you can tackle any issue. Again, this is all about aware. The first step on my, how I see it as a spiral, the first step in tackling any issue you want. So I hope you've loved this show today. We made it through without our pal, Dr. Pat. I think we did okay. I'm sure, though, she'll be back next month, and we'll be happy to have her with us. So I'm Doc Martin. This is the Healing Hour, and this was all about aware, your first step on your four-step spiral for tackling a problem. And thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for listening to Maximum Medicine Radio, the Healing Hour, with me, Dr. Sharon Martin, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We're going to be together the third Wednesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific for candid, honest conversations to help you change the way you think about healing, about yourself, about your life. Did you hear your answer on the show? Well, I will be with you next month, ready for all your questions, from energy medicine to traditional healing and beyond. Healing is flow, movement, and destination. But are you stuck? What is your true destiny line? Listen in, call in, to let the world know. Together, we'll choose what brings you into healing and let you call in all the power of the universe to act on your behalf. To learn more about me, Doc Martin, and Maximum Medicine,